The Dhamma for today is the qualities for one giving a proper teaching on the Dhamma. I translate this a little bit awkwardly because it isn't exactly the qualities of a teacher. It's the qualities of one giving a Dhamma talk, or the qualities that are important when teaching the Dhamma, giving a teaching. It's important because there is no teacher in Buddhism besides the Buddha. We're all students. Even Sariputta taught and gave teachings more often than anyone else, except for the Buddha. But still the Buddha was the teacher. And the teachings that we follow are not our own teachings. They're the teachings of the Buddha. So the first quality that isn't mentioned, these are the five qualities, but the first quality that isn't mentioned here is that one has to be teaching the teachings of the Buddha to even be considered to be giving a Dhamma talk. It's important, it should be obvious, but the important thing to remember is that when we are teaching the Dhamma, it's the Buddha's Dhamma, it's not our Dhamma, it's not our interpretation, it's not our idea, it's not our new concepts or ideas about reality. It's a very ancient and very fixed, very constant and unchanging teaching. So when one is giving a teaching of the Dhamma, one should have five qualities. And another thing to say before we get started is, before we talk about these, is though this isn't obviously a teaching about practice, that the teaching of the Dhamma is potentially a very important part of everyone's practice. So once we acknowledge that no one is ever going to be the teacher, that it will always be the Buddha is the teacher, as students, as followers of the Buddha, it is our duty to share the Dhamma with others. And an important part of our practice can be this sharing of the Dhamma. And so, though this teaching might not seem of great importance or great relevance to those of us on the path seeking enlightenment, it can indeed be an important support and an aspect of our own spiritual development. The first reason is that teaching the Dhamma is the greatest gift. And giving gifts, as we know, is a great support for one's own practice, charity, generosity. Someone who refuses to teach, someone who when presented with the opportunity to share their knowledge, refuses, has to understand that in one way they are being stingy. They are refusing the gift, something that in fact could be very easily given. You know, there's often a sense of over cautiousness among meditators who are afraid to share the teaching because they're not the Buddha, and somehow think that at some point they will become the Buddha, or they will become someone who is at some point technically qualified. And that's really not how the sharing of the Dhamma goes. Absolutely, before you begin to take on students or present yourself as a teacher of the Dhamma, you should have practiced and you should have learned very much about how to go about teaching. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about putting yourself up as a teacher, taking on students. We're talking about the Dhamma. And this sharing can be in the form of showing someone how to do walking or sitting meditation, explaining to someone the instructions that you've been given on how to be mindful. There's so much simple teachings, even just teachings on the five precepts, teachings on ethics, teaching on the Four Noble Truths, giving basic knowledge again that you're sure of. That is not your knowledge, it's the knowledge of the Buddha that you're passing on, and that you're confident that you understand simple things. Now, it's not hard to be confident in how to do the walking meditation, how to do the sitting, the basic principles of mindfulness. It's pretty easy to be sure that you know what are the four foundations of mindfulness, so telling about those things, what are the five precepts, this sort of thing. So this kind of gift is valuable because it creates the confidence, the security, the sense of gladness that comes from being generous. Someone who shares the Dhamma, who gives teachings, who shares knowledge, not their own knowledge, but the knowledge of the Buddha, is doing a great service to other people, and a great disservice if they refuse, if they are overcautious or scared that somehow they're going to get it wrong, overly meticulous, thinking that unless they know something perfectly, they can't share it, really is doing a disservice to the world. And because of the day-to-day nature of our interactions and of samsara, it doesn't stop and wait for you to become enlightened. Your interactions with others are going to be constant, of course, throughout your life. It's not something you can avoid, while you become enlightened. That the Buddhasasana would disappear if we didn't spend the time to share what we know. So it is a gift. It reinforces your own knowledge. It shows you, when you teach others, when you explain the teachings to others, it shows you what you're not sure of, what you're sure of. It helps solidify it in your own mind. Teaching the Dhamma gives you a front row seat to the Dhamma teaching. When you teach others, you're teaching yourself. Every time you teach the Dhamma, it brings you closer to the reminders, and gives you a reminder of the nature of the Buddha's teaching. And it surrounds you with people who are knowledgeable about the Dhamma. If you live your life without sharing the teaching with those around you who don't know about the Buddha's teaching, then you're going to always be surrounded by people who are ignorant of these truths, of these knowledge, of these good and valuable and practical instructions on how to be free from suffering. So giving a teaching on the Dhamma is a valuable and important part of our practice. In order to do it properly, though, you need these five qualities. The first is that you have to teach in order. The Buddha's teaching is very much about the orderly nature and progress of the path. The Buddha's teaching is not one technique or one idea that leads you to freedom. An ordinary perspective on problems is that there should be a solution. And so when we come up against the suffering of life, we ask ourselves, how can I be free from this? What can I do? What is the thing that I can undertake or ingest or practice that will free me from suffering? Our problems need to have simple solutions, but reality and the truth of suffering is that it's not a simple problem, it's a complex problem. It's something that has stages of cure, or we cure the problem step by step, starting with ethics, starting with being ethical, cultivating meditation, and finally with the arising of wisdom. The Buddha would teach always in order, and if you teach out of order, if you give deep and profound teachings even on things like the three characteristics to newcomers, they're going to have a hard time understanding them. If you teach people the five precepts and teach them the four foundations of mindfulness, then you can give them an opportunity to deepen their understanding. Even before that, if you teach people, talk to people about generosity, kindness, friendliness, all of these sort of peripheral teachings of how to be a good person, these as well can be a very good support for a beginner, for someone who is not ready to understand the deeper teachings. So you have to understand where a person is, and you have to give a teaching that is according to the level that they are, and gradually, if you're going to discuss the Dhamma on deeper levels, you go gradually deeper and deeper. But also when you're just giving a talk, and this is really what the Buddha was referring to, is you have to go step by step. You can't skip things. You have to explain the path from beginning to end. You have to give a teaching that gives a complete picture. It doesn't skip, doesn't jump around. And so preparation is valuable and important. When you're teaching the Dhamma, give the teaching in order. Start at the beginning and make sure you go all the way to the end. Another problem is sometimes teachings will fall short. So people will teach things like friendliness and present that as the Buddha's teaching, kindness, generosity, even ethics, you know, being a good person and so on, never getting to meditation. Or they might teach tranquility meditation, meditation to calm the mind, and never go further. So not only do you have to go step by step, but in order to truly teach the Buddha's teaching, you have to teach it from beginning all the way to the end. The second quality of a proper Dhamma teaching is that it relies on cause and effect. A crucial and core part of the Buddha's teaching is that it is based in reality and based in logic, reason, based in fact. So it's not something that has to be taken on belief. There are no teachings of the Buddha that are unable to be explained, that are beyond explanation. There is no magic, there is no inexplicable practices that magically lead to results or have to be taken as magically leading or inexplicably leading to their solution. Obviously, when you don't give causes, when you don't give cause and effect, when you don't give reasons and explanations, it's a breeding ground for doubt and uncertainty and a weakness to one's practice. People who are just told to practice without giving any understanding of why or the causes and the effects and the relationships between practices and their results are going to have a hard time applying themselves, committing themselves to the practice, as they're going to find themselves unsure and with lack of understanding of the true nature of what they're doing. So when we talk about being mindful, we have something fairly mindless and fairly meaningless, this repetition of a word that, you know, is often a criticism of this sort of practice. When you sit and you note watching the stomach rising and falling, or when you walk and you note the movements of the foot, this repetition of the word seems baseless, seems without cause. And so you have to explain to someone what exactly is going on. You have to help them understand what the effect is of this on the mind. Because of course every action that we undertake has a cause or has an effect. And so when you note, when you remind yourself of what you're experiencing, you experience pain, and you remind yourself this is pain, we can give explanations as to why that is, explaining that when you note, then it reminds you and it keeps you fixed and focused on the experience. And then we can explain that that becomes a cause for the arising of seeing clearly, because you're no longer judging, you're no longer reacting, you're no longer extrapolating on the experience. And once you start to see clearly, then you start to see that the things that we cling to and react to and get upset about are not worth getting upset or reacting to. They're just experiences, and so you're able to experience them without suffering. And so there are these causes and effect relationships, the nature and the reasons behind the things that we do. And this is an important part of the teaching. If you just say, do it, it works. Well, there are things that you can take on faith. Of course, you can take like the precepts on faith. Someone who is beginning to practice may not understand why you shouldn't kill or steal, and there are things that you can say, well, just practice them and you'll see the result. But we can explain to you what are the results, and we can guarantee that these are the results that you're going to see. We can teach based on cause and effect, and it's important that you don't just give these causeless or baseless instructions on how to practice. The third is that practice has to be teaching has to be done with kindness. We should teach because we should teach out of a sense of kindness or friendliness, a sense of a desire for the person to benefit from it. Our reasons for teaching have to be pure. Teaching is a challenging activity. It can be frustrating when your students don't listen, when the people who are learning from you argue or question the teaching or doubt or fail or are lazy or don't commit themselves to the practice and this sort of thing. It's easy and it's common for teachers to become frustrated. It's common for people who are explaining the teaching when it's not met with a receptive audience. To become frustrated, and it's an important reminder to us that if you want to succeed in giving this great gift of Dhamma, you have to have kindness. You have to be thinking about the people that you're teaching. This teaching is for their benefit, and I'm giving this as a gift to them. It's not out of arrogance or out of a sense of trying to change the other person or clinging to results that they might get. In order to teach, you have to be free from this kind of expectation or any kind of desire to control or manipulate your students. You give it as a gift. And of course, if the students don't take it seriously, don't practice it to their best ability, then the results are of course on them and of no concern to you, because you've given it as a gift for them to do with it what they will. The fourth quality of a proper Dhamma teaching is that one should not teach for worldly gain. There are many Dhamma teachers in the world who make their living on teaching. There are people who teach by donation who are not monks, who teach. There are people who charge for meditation courses, and that's not exactly what is being expressed here. It is possible to, it is theoretically something different, making your living by teaching the Dhamma versus doing it for worldly gain. Because of course a person, especially who is not a monk, needs to survive in order to continue teaching, and so they can rationalize in this way. Practically speaking, it's difficult if not impossible to separate the two, because if teaching is a means of livelihood, you're constantly going to be obsessed and distracted by this during the teaching, thinking that this is going to be for the purpose of benefiting me materially. Again, the teaching has to be for it to be pure, it has to be a gift, and it has to be for the benefit of the students. If you're teaching for worldly gain, obviously there's going to be a lack of sincerity, a lack of depth, and the focus of the teaching shifts away from letting go and becoming free to clinging and to holding on. So even for monastics, it's easy to fall into the trap of trying to manipulate the students, or not even unintentionally or unconsciously, into supporting the teacher, into taking you as their guide and as supporting you physically, monetarily, materially. And so it's a reminder that if you're giving the teaching, you have to be aware of this and remind yourself that this, what I am giving, is this is something beyond value. And your best way to keep this sort of purity is to never charge for the teaching, even to expect any kind of donation for the teaching, and find a way to live that is free from this sort of need. There are traditions that require their teachers to have, lay teachers require them to have occupations outside of the teaching of the Dhamma, so that they're not enticed by this sort of greed or this sort of worldly desire that would corrupt and pervert their teachings. But far better is to live a life that allows you to be free from the need to seek out livelihood at all, so that you can be free from any conflict of interest when you're teaching. You don't need support based on the teaching, because you don't need support, period. When you live a life free from any kind of need or desire for material gain, then you're completely free from this sort of conflict of interest and this sort of corruption of the teaching that taints the purity of it. The fifth quality that is required for a proper Dhamma talk is that it should not be done, literally should not be done touching upon oneself or others. But the meaning here is, should not be done in a way that elevates one's own status or puts other people down. So you should not teach trying to make yourself look good, or saying things or speaking in such a way as to brag or boast about your own accomplishments, and also not to attack other people by name or personally. Of course, there are stories that can be told in a general sense about individuals as a cautionary tale, but it's easy to fall into the trap both ways, of bragging about one's own accomplishments and making oneself look good, and or criticizing the teachings of others. And there are many different kinds of meditation teachings, many kinds of spiritual paths, and you do yourself a disservice and you cultivate the wrong sorts of qualities in your audience if you either brag about your own attainments or try and elevate your own self, or when you put other people down. Obviously, this leads, if they are a receptive audience, it leads them to have a bias against those people and can lead to negative qualities of mind that are not conducive to freeing yourself from suffering. Even though there are teachings out there that we might consider to be problematic, maybe you can say inferior, this isn't the way of teaching that we should ever go about. We shouldn't try to denigrate the traditions and the practices of others. We should focus on our own teaching and understand, let the audience and ourselves have an understanding that is free from bias, free from prejudice, free from ill will, and likewise free from any kind of pride or attachment to our own teachings. The Buddha was very clear that if someone praises the Buddha's teaching or praises him, praises the Buddhism, if we feel good about that, we won't have a clear mind, and we won't be able to keep the perspective of seeing what is true and what is not true. And it'll be easy to become proud and weak in mind, you know, and easily subject to annoyance and irritation when people speak badly about the teachings. Likewise, when people do speak bad about the teachings, if we let ourselves become irritated and upset, then we won't be able to see clearly. And so cultivating this by attacking the teachings of others, or by praising one's own teachings or one's own tradition, or praising oneself, is obviously an important pitfall that we have to be careful about. So, guidelines about teaching the Dhamma, and important because of what I want to emphasize, that everyone should consider it a part of their practice to share the teaching with others. You shouldn't be afraid to share what you know, what is easily easily understood as something that we are qualified to teach, showing people how to practice, talking about basic practices. We could spread the teaching to the world if people were willing to take the time to share it with those who are looking for it. And so this is an important part of our practice as Buddhists. If we're going to do so, all we have to do is remember these sorts of simple guidelines, that we're doing it for the right reasons, out of kindness, that we're doing it in the right way, that we know our stuff from beginning to end. We know the stages that one should go through and the teachings that have to be given. We wouldn't teach meditation to someone who isn't willing to keep the five precepts, so we would teach the five precepts first and give causes and effects, give reasons for what we're doing, that sort of thing. And do it for the right reasons. Don't do it for worldly gain, and don't pollute the teaching with arrogance or conceit or judgment of others. Try and just give the teachings and teach the truth just as it is. So, a valuable thing for us as Buddhists over the long term, and for practitioners, something that we should take to heart and practice. Teaching the Dhamma should be a part of our practice. So, that's the Dhamma for today.